Christopher Alcaraki.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel. My name is Michael Alcaraki, and I am here on behalf of the plaintiff, appellant John Doe, a minor, buying through his property.
That's my first question. What is the justification for anonymity of the plaintiff in this case? The district judge and the parties have revealed the identities of the two defendants, the village of Thornton and John Klasek. Whether I'm pronouncing that correctly, but their identities are open. Mr. Klasek was prosecuted and convicted for assaulting your client, and I gather from the information in this case that your client is now 25 years old. So I don't understand what the justification for his being anonymous is, nor do I understand the justification for the statement in the briefs that he's proceeding by his father as next friend. Only a minor can proceed via his parent as next friend, and your client hasn't been a minor for quite some time.
Sure, Judge. Well, just in keeping with the procedure, I had addressed the parties in the briefs that way, but I'm happy now with, it sounds like, the court's permission to refer to the parties by name.
So you're no longer asserting any interest in anonymity?
No.
All right, let's proceed.
This matter, as the court knows, is here on appeal from a final judgment of the district court, which dismissed several counts related to 1983 actions. The main issue here, putting aside the conspiracy count for the moment, is the level of knowledge of the village that John Klasek was dangerous. The court,
I think what concerned the district court was that you appear to have foregone the opportunity to do anything but bring what I'll call a Monell action against the village, but that you, in the district court's view, failed to satisfy the requirements for Monell action. There's certainly no express policy on the part of the village of Thornton permitting this kind of behavior, and the district court thought that you had not shown that final policymakers or anything, the sort of real pattern of behavior that would allow you to infer a policy as opposed to having an express policy was shown. So I think it would be helpful if you focused on that, since you the district court's footnote anyway said you do not appear to be bringing any kind of individual capacity 1983 case claims.
Right.
Okay.
And the level of knowledge and notice is relevant to the determination of
why
a policy.
Why is it relevant to final policymaker capacity? Isn't that a question of law under Illinois? Who is it in the village of Thornton who has final policymaking authority?
Well, okay.
Does a single trustee, for example? Does the fire chief? Does the village president?
The district court's position, based on the statutes of Illinois, was that the Board of Trustees is the final policy-making authority for the
right.
village.
Right.
Okay.
And that's not something that you could go forward on, so that's why you lost in the district court, right?
Well, I disagree that it's not something we can go forward on.
Why? What evidence did you present showing that the Board of Trustees as a whole took some action adverse to your client?
Well, there was a member of the Board of Trustees who received direct outcry prior to my client's assault that
right.
the assailant was dangerous and was engaging in sexual relationships with minors. Now, I disagree with the court's finding that the Board of Trustees was the final policymaker by itself, because if you do look to the statutes, the state statutes, which are mirrored by the village's own ordinance, the president, in this case Jack Swan, appoints, with the advice and consent of the Board of Trustees, the fire chief, Mr. Klasek, in this case. So there, what's kind of happening in this case is the defendant is essentially saying, We can't stop this from happening because there's no one here who has the power. Well, if you look to the statute and if you look to what actually happened, you'll see that the president did have the power. What happened after Klazek was arrested? The president removed him immediately, followed promptly by the confirmation of that removal by the Board of Trustees.
And let me just go back to the idea of a Monell case. On the one hand, the Supreme Court has laid out a theory under which people can obtain relief against an entity like the village, a municipality. On the other hand, there are individual capacity theories under which you could have sued the president of the village. You could have sued perhaps even the single trustee who learned and I guess didn't communicate this sufficiently to the board. But the idea of holding the village itself liable for what went on as opposed to these individuals who may have failed entirely in their duty to carry forth their jobs responsibly. Those are two different theories or two different ideas. And I think that what you need to... The problem is we have a lot of cases where people have been delegated authority. You know, a school superintendent is the one who runs the schools. A village president may run the village. There are all kinds of people who have a lot of authority, but that doesn't mean that they're the final authority for that entity.
Sure, I understand. I think it's instructive to actually look at the district court's treatment of that issue.
Okay.
Interesting here on page 16 of the opinion, the court says, perhaps it could be said that village officials and policymakers did not act prudently when they had clear notice, and then he goes on to talk about the drug use and the allegations of sexual assault. Okay. The judge's issue was essentially that what he's essentially saying is, well, maybe the village and the policymakers may have been negligent. Clearly they were. I think it looks like he's saying that. But we have a higher standard here. The deliberate indifference, what perhaps if this were a state law claim could be called willful and wanton. That's what he's saying. The judge identified that based on the knowledge of every significant village official in this case, two police chiefs, the mayor, a member of the Board of Trustees, the entire fire department, essentially. Based on that, plaintiffs are entitled to an inference. That's our position. We're entitled to an inference from a jury, or at least from the judge at the summary judgment stage.
That the village has a policy that condones harassment of minors.
Yes. A policy of deliberate indifference, turning a blind eye toward credible allegations of sexual assault. There's no contest.
Are there any other instances in this record in which the village has similarly disregarded credible allegations?
They are all with regard to this individual defendant, but there are many.
No, I know there were a lot of allegations with respect to this person. I just wondered if over the years the village routinely turns this blind eye to evidence of abuse of children.
Well, certainly in this case the evidence is limited to Klazek. Okay, I understand that. And the judge did point that out because he did discuss kind of the second method, not the express policy, a second method of a widespread practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's a third that we've been discussing thus far, which is a policymaker. The court identified what it sounds like your concern is, well, this is just one person.
My concern is generally, you know, is there a branch of Monell that would be a sound basis to rest your case on? And we all agree it's not the first part, so that leaves the second and the third part, and the judge below really focused on the third part, which is why that's what I've been looking at. Hard to see a pattern if this is the only child, well, when he was a minor, if this is the only one this happened to. That sounds like the system breaking down, not like the village policy.
Well, I think that might be the case if it were just one child. But here we have three children here, known sexual assault victims of this individual. And we do have repeated instances of this individual being promoted despite allegations of drug use, despite public posting of a letter identifying that he's giving alcohol and narcotics to children and that he's seen around them. Okay? He was promoted to fire chief with virtually no experience in firefighting, virtually none, after he resigned from being a police officer due to drug use, which is admitted in the record.
No, I mean, look, Mr. Al-Karaki, you're not going to get any argument from me that Mr. Klazak was a walking disaster, and I don't know why all of this. I mean, one can infer from the record, actually, some of the reasons why things went on as long as they did, but we have a narrower question in front of it, which is whether the village has somehow fallen within the scope of liability.
Sure. And I think, and I believe they have. And there's a case, it is a district case, and it's almost identical to this case. It is the Doe versus Board of Ed of Consolidated School District 230, which is just remarkably identical to this case. And it's not a Seventh Circuit case, but it essentially will be by the time a ruling is made on this case. And it's got the exact same type of notice, except for the fact that we have direct allegations made to people empowered to do something about it, police chiefs, the mayor. Now, in that case, what the court found was, well, there's no evidence in the record to show that the final policymaker had knowledge, actual knowledge, of this teacher's assault of students. But due by virtue of the fact that these other individuals in the school system had various forms of knowledge, including rumor, speculation, innuendos, okay, by virtue of that, summary judgment would be improper because a jury could reasonably find that the people who did make decisions knew about this person's dangerous propensities when they decided to rehire him. That is this case, except for the fact that we have direct allegations.
How does that map onto Monell? I have the same problem as Judge Wood. Monell says defendants are liable, municipalities are liable only for their policies. And you might be able to show a policy by showing an enduring pattern. But they're not liable for breakdowns in the implementation of their policies. And your argument seems to be there was a serious breakdown in the implementation of the village's policy. And that sounds to maybe a perfectly good argument for liability under common law, but it sounds like an argument for the defendant under Monell rather than for the plaintiff. Why does the claim that things broke down here and the village just didn't do what it ought to have in order to carry out its own policy simply mean that Monell applies?
Well, I don't think it was a simple breakdown. This case is about conscious decisions in the face of credible allegations. Okay, this, and really, if you look at Monell, our second means of establishing a policy is this widespread practice. Why is that relevant?
Well, that's why Judge Wood asked if there was a widespread practice. Has the village made a practice of firing sex assaulters?
Right. And
the answer is, has it hired? I mean, does it go out of its way to hire sex abusers? Are there people other than Klazak in that category?
Again, there is not evidence in the record about that. It's limited to Klazak, but I would submit to the court that second means of a widespread practice.
Look, counsel, there are two ways to understand the hiring of a sex abuser. One is we want to hire sex abusers, or we're totally indifferent to them, or something like that. The other is the village of Thornton is a small jurisdiction, has a difficult task getting a fire chief at the wages it's willing to pay, and it may be forced by the market to take some risks, right? The latter kind of thing might establish liability under state common law, but it doesn't under Monell. We have to figure out which of these it is.
I understand. I would like to answer that question. What I was saying is the widespread practice, why is that relevant? How does that establish a policy? Because you can infer that the people who know about this and that the people who make decisions know about this and approve of it. There's an inference associated with that, and that inference should be entitled to the plaintiff, in this case, in summary judgment based on the evidence.
That's just a state law theory. It's not Monell.
The president knew. A board of trustee members knew. Two police chiefs.
Counsel, by any chance have you read Orema against Rice? Judge Wood referred to the Orema decision of this circuit.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have two Orema decisions, one having to do with appellate jurisdiction in these kinds of cases, and the other having to do with satisfying Monell. The allegations in Orema were that the Chicago police chief did the kind of thing that you're accusing the village of Thornton of doing, and we held that as a matter of law there was no liability under Monell. I notice your brief doesn't discuss Orema.
Well, I understand that because that was limited to, there were not the kind of multiple allegations to multiple parties in that case that there are here.
Thank you, counsel.
Well.
Mr. Koenig.
Morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Putting aside the issue of waiver, one of the problems we had in our brief in this court was specifically trying to identify what is the theory upon which the plaintiff is basing their claim of municipal liability, whether it's a widespread custom policy practice or whether it's generally the third prong, whether it's the actions of persons.
Certainly on his feet. Counsel was saying that municipalities should be liable under the same circumstances that a private employer would be liable for negligent hiring, because the theory he was articulating is the line of argument one would take to get vicarious liability for negligent hiring against a private employer.
And as we've known all along since 1978, respondeat superior under Monell is not a sufficient basis, nor is negligence a sufficient basis for imposing liability upon a public entity. It's got to be deliberate indifference, and the deliberate indifference is whether it's the second or third prongs, it's deliberate indifference of those individuals possessing final policy-making authority. One through the second prong, putting aside the express policy, one through the second prong, whether there's a widespread custom and practice such that knowledge can be imputed to final policymakers, not just anybody, but knowledge can be imputed to final.
We could have a debate, I suppose, about what widespread means in connection with a village the size of Thornton. How many people are on its payroll total?
Don't know that, Your Honor. I suspect less than 100. We look at, the fire department was volunteer fire department. They have a public works department. They have some clerical persons. To answer Your Honor's question about how widespread was this practice, there were two assaults supported in the record.
Two sexual assaults by one employee, correct.
Approximately 2 years apart, I should say.
Is there any, in asking how widespread a practice is too widespread or something like that, do you know of any source of data or information that you could find out how common sexual assaults are by employees of well-managed organizations? I don't know if we have a definition of what a well-managed organization is, but right there must be some source of data. Maybe insurers compile this kind of thing.
I don't know.
How common misconduct by employees is if the employer is trying to screen responsibly.
I don't know whether even the standard would be a well-managed organization.
No, I was trying to start there, and then one could ask, how poorly managed does Monell allow a municipality to be?
Well, I can know
what a well-managed employer's workforce does, how many crimes they commit. It's hard to figure out how far we back off as a result of Monell.
You see how you can involve yourself in philosophic discussions about problems.
Again, this wasn't discussed in their opening brief. Gable versus City of Chicago, the court held that a handful of incidents over a couple of years was insufficient.
Right, so your answer is you don't know the answer to my question.
No, I don't, Your Honor. And
it's
more importantly,
an interesting question, perhaps for some other case.
Well, and it's not in the record, and it's not my burden to show how infrequent it is. It would be his burden to show how frequently.
You've got to be careful. Some member of this court might write a book on a subject. So.
I would also like to point out, Your Honor, it's clear under the case law in this circuit that a village president, standing alone, does not have final policymaking authority. And under Orema and under Propotnick, I think the two standards are, one, is the individual the individual's discretion constrained by those in, by the, those individuals that possess final policymaking authority. In this case, the trustees enacted a sex harassment policy. Anyone who failed to report sex harassment or who committed sex harassment was acting contrary to policy. And that was, I believe, the reason underlying the AREMA decision. The superintendent of police was accused of racial discrimination. The city had a policy prohibiting racial discrimination. They said he could not be making policy when he's in fact acting contrary to policy of the city council. So whether it's Klazak committing an assault, whether it's the village president failing to show the responsibility that the municipality imposed upon him to report this, whether it's the chiefs of police who did not take any action, or whether it's one sole trustee who failed to take any action to report to the powers that be, in this case the trustees, Rashi versus Beecher holds that presumptively it is the Board of Trustees collectively that possess final policymaking authority. That's clearly demonstrated here with their enactment of the policy prohibiting sexual harassment.
How many trustees are there in Thornton?
Seven. By statute, the trustees, by the municipal code, there are seven trustees. I don't know how many were present at the time, nor do I even know that it is the same trustees in 2002 that were the trustees that hired Klazak.
Well, in their official capacity, that wouldn't matter. But if the trustees as a whole had taken some action, we'd have a different case.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that simply because in the I recall case law in the context of equal protection challenges where they say we have to look and see if the village did something similar in the past. For example, they talk about allowing zoning changes. They said we've got to focus on the same board because, I mean, if there's one board that's clearly lax and a board later on in 2002 that's very strongly sexual harassment or against sexual harassment, how can you say that actions of one board demonstrate that another board had the same illegal motivation? Because that's what you have to look at. The illegal, this may be an official capacity claim, but you have to look at the trustees themselves, those individuals possessing final policymaking authority.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think actually you're on much stronger ground if you're saying what is the what do we look to ascertain the policy of the village of Thornton? I know these are kind of crazy counterfactuals, but if the village of Thornton, through its trustees, had issued a policy in which it said no more background checks are going to be performed on any high-level employees because they're expensive and we don't really care if they have unsavory activities in their past, I mean, that would be a very troublesome policy to have because there could be criminal activity, there could be harassment, there could be whatever else might be out there. Another board of trustees might take a more prudent approach, but as long as a policy is in place, that's the policy of the village. I know in the equal protection cases there's the question of going into issues of intentional discrimination and the like. I'm not sure you need to get that far.
I don't. I mean, the policy's in place, Your Honor. The policy prohibiting sexual harassment. That is the stated policy. And unless there is evidence that the individuals possessing final policymaking authority, the trustees collectively, are not enforcing that policy by permitting or by hiring multiple employees who engage in sexual harassment, which is
and
not the case.
And you also have to be arguing that the trustees, that the board of trustees can't be sued under 1983 for negligent supervision of the village president or of the fire chief or of whomever.
Clearly. I mean, negligence doesn't apply. I mean, I thought the case law is clear. Davis or Davidson, I believe, versus Cannon, Supreme Court, I thought they said negligence isn't enough. We know that it's a deliberate indifference standard, and that's the case law here. I would just like to point out as well really what the facts are as it relates to the conduct on the fire department. You know, it's characterized as this department in which sexual harassment is well known on the fire department. I would just like to point out the testimony of several of the individuals on the department. This, what went on, I guess for lack of a better word, was cruel, I should say crude humor. And I use the word humor lightly. We had one of the cadets, Wandell, talking about this was jokes between the guys. The plaintiff himself said a cadet or one of the chief's good friends would be subject to the same banner. Another firefighter, Smith, said cadets, other guys, or even senior guys would be subject to the same type of banner. And again, Wandell said it was not just the chief if you spent time with it. If you spent time with the captain or the lieutenant, they would make the same types of comments. You must be giving that individual sexual favors. That's not an awareness of facts. That's an awareness of jokes, of cruel humor. And again, for deliberate indifference, you have to be aware of facts from which an inference that sexual misconduct is occurring and, in fact, draw that inference. And again, clearly, under Rashi, the village president does not possess final policymaking authority. Under Oriema, when we have a policy in place, none of the fire chiefs or chief of police possess final policymaking authority. We also argued in our brief that there was no duty because there's no special relationship, citing the Collins versus Harker Heights case. I'm aware of the decision of this court a few weeks ago in the T.E. versus Grindle case, adopting the Third Circuit opinion in Stonewood, I believe. But there was a special relationship. Here, there is no special relationship. It's nothing more than employer-employee relationship. Under Collins versus Harker Heights, the court held that typically we require an individual to be somehow restrained of liberty before we're going to recognize some type of a special duty. This was the employer-employee relationship and nothing more, clearly different than a student-teacher relationship. If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honor. I ask that the decision of the court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Al-Karaki, your time's almost gone. We'll give you a whole minute for rebuttal.
Well, I'd just like to point out briefly that there is a special relationship here. This case is like a school district case. This was not an employer-employee relationship. The plaintiff was not getting paid. The only person to be getting paid out of these cadets was a 14-year-old or 15-year-old who was being sexually assaulted by this individual. No one was getting paid in this case. The case is Stone King, by the way, and this is a lot like Stone King. Doe is founded on Stone King. And ultimately, the defendants and the court below have held that and are arguing that the Board of Trustees needs to get together and discuss this and actually make a ruling on what to do with Klazak. That's not the case. That would be an express policy. There's enough information here for a jury to infer that the decision makers, the Board of Trustees, the President, all knew enough about this guy to get rid of him before the assault. So I'd ask that the district court's summary judgment be reversed.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Al-Karaki, in light of your representation, I trust that you will file a motion to change the caption of the case so it reflects the party's actual names.
Sure.
That should be filed in due course. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.